a gun in the face.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
Started 2 years of horror for an American in Venezuela.
They said, you need to give us your phone and get ready because you're coming with us.
I'm Becky Bruce, and I spent a year researching and piecing together Josh and Tammy Holt's story about their ordeal in a notorious prison.
That's when everything started to turn bad. We had another pound on the door. Boom, boom, boom. And there was the police once again.
You can binge all of the episodes of Hope and Darkness on KSLPodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get outside. This is KSL Outdoors.
Brought to you by Trax Power Sports Rentals.
2 hours of stories and information on hunting, fishing, and high adventure.
KSL Outdoors with Tim Hughes on KSL News Radio 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
Hour number two and the final one for another week of KSL Outdoors Radio. That was a great first hour. I'm so glad we got Wayne for the time we did. He mentioned that his wife is whisking him off for a vacation somewhere. It's funny because after 45 and a half years, and I guess Russ and Bob, you could probably relate to this, he's kind of got into a little bit of a routine. And it sounds like even after all these years, he'd just as soon be out on his boat fishing at Lake Powell, which he had the opportunity to do every day. But he said, my wife's going to drag me away for a, for a vacation, and then I'll come back and I'll do some more fishing at Lake Powell. It's great stuff. Russ Smith is here from Sky Call Satellite, Sky Call Communications. Good morning. I thought he was here. This is what
did he hit the mute button again?
I don't know. Sometimes when the dog is barking in the background or his boss is sitting at the desk next to him telling him that he hasn't finished his honeydews, he mutes the microphone so we don't get a chance to talk here. Anyway, while we wait for the return of Russ Smith, let's bring Bob Grove into the conversation. Bob, good to have you this hour. That was a fun conversation with Wayne, though.
Oh, it was. Wayne is a legend. I got to tell you, it's good. You know, I'm glad to hear that he's going to keep his blog going because if you need information, that's all you have to do is click on Wayne's word. You're going to get everything you need to know.
Yeah. What are we going to focus on when we go road tripping in the next segment? I forgot to mention that off the top.
Oh, well, we're going to, you know, the Navajo Nation is reopening their tribal parks.
Oh, good.
And so they've been closed for over 400 days. And so they're in the process of reopening now. So we'll talk a little bit about some of the places you can go down there and what we've missed for the last year and a half.
Look forward to that. Roger Eggett will join us again coming up right after the news on the half hour, and we'll talk about Bear River Lodge and Trax Power Sports. And then our camp spot of the week, Russ, if he finds the mute button there, will be joining us, I think, and we'll wrap up the program talking about it.
I'm back.
Oh, he's back.
Yeah, the whole everything shut off.
So. Oh, all right.
And the reboot.
Well, it's glad to have you back with us. We were reminiscing. You didn't get a chance to chime in when we had Wayne on, but we were talking about our trip to the cathedral in the desert. What a memorable trip that was.
Yeah. I imagine that there is even less water now, and that would be an awesome trip.
Yeah. It's one of those things when the water is up, you just can't get access to. Even the guy that had worked there for 45 years said that he had boated above that or gone through that canyon, but you just couldn't access it. And we got lucky way back, I think it was, 2005.
Yeah, I think so, too.
All right. This hour, happy to make a connection with Kim Hersey, who is the non-game mammals coordinator. Is it Hershey or Hersey? I want to make sure I say it right.
Hershey, not the chocolate bar.
Ah, okay, good. Great to have you today. It's a topic that we don't often get to talk about, and maybe it's because in the past there just weren't that many otters in the state, so why would anybody talk about it? But why otters today?
Well, we did quite a few reintroduction efforts for otters since the 1990s, and right now we really want to get a good picture of where otters are in the state to go back and look at our management plan for the species.
So are you
we're asking people to...
Yeah, I was going to say, are you enlisting the help of the public to do that?
Exactly. We would love anybody who sees an otter to report it to the DWR. There's a lot more people out there and eyes and ears than we have, so we'd love that information.
I don't know, and I'll ask both of you. Bob, you first. Have you ever watched an otter or a family of them in the wild? It's pretty wild.
Yeah, up in Yellowstone. That's it.
Okay. Beginning and end of story, evidently. We had a report, and you might remember this, Russ, on the show of river otters, and I'm sure, Kim, you can also verify this, on the Weber River. This was last year, I think. Oh. And people were talking about how much fun it was because it wasn't that far out of town, out of Ogden. Might have been even within the city limits that people spent hours watching these guys play because it can be pretty entertaining.
I'm personal friends with the family of otters.
Are you?
On the Green River.
Okay.
Right across the river from Little Hole.
Oh.
They are very entertaining, and that's usually where the traffic on the river backs up, and you can just kind of kick back. I'm usually the guy rowing the boat. You just kind of kick back and watch the otters for a while.
Yeah.
And they're not scared of anybody because they're pretty fast.
Yeah. Catching up with them would be difficult. But do you remember specific, Kim, about reports of otters on the Weber?
You know, we've had this request out for the last couple of days, and I've gotten a lot of reports from the Weber and Ogden Rivers, which are areas that, you know, we don't have strong evidence for them before. So we're excited to get in there, maybe put out some remote cameras and get more information on otters in that area especially.
How are we doing with the population right now?
You know, we really don't have a population estimate because they exist in low densities and move around a lot. I can't say that there's 100 or 1,000. But we do know that since the reintroductions, they've spread through, you know, most of the Green and Colorado River systems. And from a reintroduction we did on the Provo about 10 years ago, we know that, you know, they're still through that system, and we're looking to see where they've dispersed from there.
Well, we always use this term, a canary in the coal mine. Otters are kind of that for how we're doing environmentally in these aquatic areas, aren't they?
Exactly. They're the top predator in a river system, and, you know, they eat fish and crayfish, and so they require healthy populations of fish, which require, you know, healthy water, abundant channels and floodplains. So when you've got otters there, you know, things are generally going well in a system.
And they just don't do well in polluted areas, and that's not good news for the age we live in right now, I'm sure.
Exactly. Luckily, you know, in a lot of ways, though, our rivers are cleaner than they were historically and when a lot of things were being dumped into them. So, you know, we've really seen a resurgence of river otters across the country.
I'm sure, like many things in the wild, you get some misidentifications on otters these days. People may see a muskrat or a beaver or even a mink in the wild and think it's an otter, so you got to be careful about that, too.
Exactly. You know, when we have people submit their sightings, if they have a picture, it would be huge help because they are easily misidentified. But especially when you're just seeing a nose swimming through the water. But to tell them apart from beaver and muskrat, if the whole body is up, you know, level along the top of the water, that's usually a beaver or muskrat. Otters, you're mostly just going to see their nose. They're longer and leaner, agile, fast swimmers. And if you see their tail, that's a clear giveaway between those. And minks are just a lot smaller, and a lot of people don't know that those are in a lot of our river systems as well.
What's distinctive about the tail, or is it just the tail itself?
Well, if a muskrat has those sort of a narrow, scaly tail, a beaver has its typical tail, and river otters have long, round tails that are covered in fur, and then usually drop down from the body and curl back up, versus a mink, which is sort of smaller and more of just a line from the back of the body.
Well, I hope that our rivers stay clean enough that the otters feel safe and can be healthy in those areas, but I also hope people get the opportunity to see them in the wild. If they do, what are the specifics for people to help you out with this challenge of reporting back to you?
We've set up utahotters@gmail.com, and if you just shoot us a message there, please include when you saw it, where you saw it, and again, if you can get a picture or a video, that always helps us out as well.
Yeah, because then you can verify it is indeed an otter. We appreciate your time today, but more so, we appreciate all the work you do when nobody's watching, nobody's talking about it. Kim Hersey is the non-game mammals coordinator for the Division of Wildlife Resources. Thanks for your time.
All right, thanks for having me.
Quick break and back with more. We're going road tripping with Bob next.
Two friends taking pictures of the rising full moon on a summer night.
Two teenage kids doing what teenage kids do.
When a stranger with a gun and a death wish changed everything.
It was violent, it was senseless, and I will never understand it, I will never accept it.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and unfortunately, we're all too familiar with stories about how violence shatters lives. But what we rarely see is how they are rebuilt. In a new podcast, The Letter, we relive tragedy, but only so we can hear the rest of the story. The struggle to reclaim lives, the realities of grief, and the possibilities of forgiveness.
I believe in miracles. Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, it's time to hit the road again. That means we're going road tripping with Bob and Mark, but it's just Bob this week.
On the road again.
And it's all right. He has enough miles under his belt to fly solo, although he's usually not doing the driving, he's doing the talking. Playing on that microphone, talking to the blue-haired ladies in the back of the bus. Which is the way the tour goes. And stopping at every souvenir shopping place along the way, I think.
Oh, boy, I tell you, if you don't, you'll be lynched shopping. big part of touring.
I'll bet it is. You got any tours planned? One in the fall, I know, but between now and then.
I've got a day tour design, which I'm not looking forward to.
Just because of the crowds, I'm sure.
Yeah. Oh, did you hear that the June set another record, 670,000 visitors in the month of June.
Oh, my gosh.
Zion National Park alone.
Ah.
Every month for the last 9 months have been record numbers each month.
Well, Nish, at least you don't have to do the fancy dance with reservations on the shuttle buses anymore, right?
No, and that you know, I can understand the reasoning behind that. And surprisingly, they discontinued. I was surprised. I thought they were going to use this as part of their new program for reducing traffic and so forth, but it was tough go trying to get a reservation. I like that they discontinued it, but yeah,
well,
it's
then,
crowded,
and then when it's 112 degrees, tempers are short too, so that's probably the other factor.
Yeah, and plus, you know, we have several trails closed, so it pushes people onto the open trails, and so they trails that are open are busier than normal because of the closure of Weeping Rock, Hidden Canyon, Observation Point from the bottom, and Watchman is right now. I think it was damaged from the last flood, and I don't know if they've reopened that yet or not. They were going to look at restructuring the trail itself.
All right, let's talk about in the minutes we have here what you wanted to focus on today, and that is the reopening of Navajo Nation tribal parks. Including Monument Valley, I got my first, well, actually, it's my second look at it. Russ, on any of our road adventures, did we pass, I'm sure we did, Monument Valley on our rides?
I've been to Monument Valley so many times over the last few years. I don't recall whether we were there together, but I don't know where we would have been going if we just passed by there.
Well, and
you and I.
Bob, you suggested maybe it was when we were headed down to Goosenecks, but I don't know if that's the way we went.
Well, Goosenecks is north of there. Goosenecks is north. That would be the closest state park to Monument Valley.
I don't think we did because from Goosenecks, yeah.
That's probably when you did Moki Dugway.
Yeah. Went down Moki Dugway and over towards,
right.
We made that kind of a big circle.
But the good news, Bob, is Monument Valley's open.
Yeah, this is we've been long awaiting the announcement of the Navajo Nation reopening their tribal parks because it's such a big part of the Grand Circle region. And so this announcement was just made recently, July 12th, that they're going to gradually reopen with limited capacity, I believe up to 50% of their typical capacity. So it's still not fully open. Masks are still mandated. So if you go, be sure to take your mask with you because they will require it. But this means Monument Valley, Antelope Canyon, Four Corners, and other tribal parks. Those are the three that are the more popular for folks coming out of the Wasatch Front. So we're excited about this, especially on our tours, because this year we haven't been able to visit. Antelope Canyon is one of the big iconic draws in Page to see Antelope Canyon. It's one of the postcard destinations. It's been a big disappointment for members of our tours not being able to visit that. Same with Monument Valley. The best we can do is pass by it, see it from a distance. So we're excited to hear the reopening.
Yeah, and they were hit so hard with the pandemic at the Navajo Nation in particular. That's why they've been so careful about reopening. But you talk about the disappointment. I'll always be grateful that you helped make us some arrangements on our motorcycle ride with my brother and his friends from Missoula last year, and we really had hoped to stop in and be able to see Monument Valley. We drove past, but Antelope Canyon was not possible at the time. So you're right. It will be a big draw, I'm sure, for people if they plan on heading to that that area soon.
Yeah, and if anybody's planning on visiting, I would recommend making your arrangements as soon as possible, because with a limited number each day, it was already busy. It was already hard to get a reservation before with full capacity. So if this is something that you would like to do, I would recommend jumping on that as soon as you can to see if you can get a reservation.
Is there one general website for all of that?
Well, you can go. You can just Google Antelope Canyon. There's Upper Canyon, Lower Canyon. You could just Google it. It's going to pull up a variety of different tour companies that operate the tours at Antelope Canyon. Same with Monument Valley. You can, you know, if you Google it, it'll pull up all the necessary information that you'll need for visiting these areas. Okay. Four Corners again doesn't require a reservation. It's just right there. About an hour and a half from Bluff, Utah, actually. It's, you know, to be honest with you, it's not right at Four Corners. It's actually in Mexico, New Mexico.
Don't ruin it for people. Bob.
But you didn't hear that from me. Russ, did you say that out loud? I can't believe that you actually said that out loud.
Yeah, so I don't know. Maybe it was you that told me originally that it wasn't the right spot. Somebody told me that quite a while back.
It's really close.
Well, yeah, it just doesn't have the same draw when the tourism package says sort of the Four Corners area.
People, there's got to be a little monument where the Four Corners really is.
I think there is. Yeah, there's a little something on the ground, isn't there?
Well, they've got the big monument there where everybody does their thing, you know, the twister of putting. But that's not the exact spot. It's near there, though. Yeah. Not far from there.
Gonna have to go find it.
Doesn't make for great pictures, however, when you have to explain what you're doing. Yeah. Standing.
Well, we won't tell anybody. We'll just keep this to ourselves.
Yeah. All right. I'm sure you have information on all of these great places on your blog site, which of course is just Road Tripping with Bob and Mark. You'll find them roadtrippingwithbobandmark.com. Got a break. When we come back, Roger Eggett joins us, great sponsor of this program week in and week out with both Bear River Lodge and Trax Power Sports. That's coming up next. Stay there.
Two friends taking pictures of the rising full moon on a summer night.
Two teenage kids doing what teenage kids do.
When a stranger with a gun and a death wish changed everything.
It was violent. It was senseless. And I will never understand it. I will never accept it.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and unfortunately, we're all too familiar with stories about how violence shatters lives. But what we rarely see is how they are rebuilt. In a new podcast, The Letter, we relive tragedy, but only so we can hear the rest of the story. The struggle to reclaim lives, the realities of grief, and the possibilities of forgiveness.
I believe in miracles. Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.